Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 30, Silver Branch Perception, The Story of Brans Imhoff. So this episode serves as the third part of a trinity I didn't necessarily know I was creating. In this episode, I'm going to share with you another story of a voyage, of an Imhoff, this one about King Bran. In our first episode in this accidental trinity, I gave you my own story, my own Imhoff that included 17 arrivals when I went to Ireland this past July. That story was in some ways patterned on the tale of Mel Doon. Then I had Erica O'Reilly here on the show. This year's resident storyteller shared with us her tale of her trip to Ireland, which also, coincidentally, happened in July. She was on a two-week artist's residence in County Kerry. For her, it was less about arriving, and it was more about the exquisite pain of departing and how hard it was for her to leave Ireland, even though she had so much to love back at home in Turtle Island, back at home in Canada. This particular story is going to dwell on the third part, which is, of course, the homecoming, which can be both sweet and painful, exquisite and excruciating. As is our way on Knot Work, Myth, and Storytelling, first I'll share with you that tale and then explore with you all the ways that it's resonating for me right now. But first, I wanted to make sure that you knew that we still have a few seats left in the Writer's Knot community. In this community, writers from around the world gather together in what I think of as the place where mythic imagination meets creative expression. Each week, we get together to write according to the prompts that I'll provide for you. Our themes throughout the months to come, running from September to the very start of January, all revolve around different mythic landscapes, the cliff, the cave, the cottage, the castle, and so many more that you've heard me talk about on the show in the past. This is a chance not only to truly think about your relationship with the land, your relationship with the imagination, but also the people, the energies, the ideas, the great stories that populate those spaces. We'll be running two groups this fall. Wednesdays at noon Eastern and Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern. That Wednesday group is almost completely full, but there are seats available for the Friday group. If you're interested, I invite you to go over to my website, marisagowdy.com, and there you can navigate to the Writer's Knot community. I truly hope you'll consider joining us for this round. Right now, when it seems as if so much of what we love and care for is under siege, whether it's because of environmental degradation or the ways in which technology and artificial intelligence seem to be telling us that art might as well be created by a machine. It is a radical, rebellious, powerful act to sit down and meet yourself on the page. And I can tell you from the 8 years I've been running these Writer's Knot communities that doing it together with others on their own creative paths, we're coming together to hear one another, to meet one another, to hold space for one another, is one of the most powerful things that you could do. So please consider joining us in the Writer's Knot community. We begin the second week of September. And now, let me tell you a story. There once was a king. His name was Bran, son of Feeble. And he was a man's man. He loved to sit in his great hall at his feasting table, surrounded by his warriors and brethren. Every night had an element of celebration. After the hunt, after the harvest, a glass was always raised and a laugh was had. But there was one day that Bran tired of that usual festive routine. He got up from his feasting table and walked from the great hall into the quiet of the night. He looked up to the stars and he felt inside of him a peace, a desire to welcome in a sense of peace that he'd never really experienced before. And he wandered in a way that he didn't usually do. He was a man of purpose. He was a leader. He was always showing people which way to go. No, this night he wandered. And as he did, he heard a sound he'd never heard before. It was something like music and more than music. He was entranced. He walked and he wandered and walked, until eventually that sound got into his head, into his soul, and he bent down to his knees, and he lay down upon the ground, and he looked up to the sky, and he felt that music inside of him, that music that was more than music, the music of everything, from the stars in the heavens, to the grass beneath him, to the bedrock below. And then he fell asleep. And when he woke in the morning, he couldn't tell if he could still hear the music or if that music was just playing inside of his own cells. But when he turned, about to rise, he saw that laying beside him was a branch of an apple tree. Now, this was strange because he had not fallen asleep in an apple grove. And it was also strange because this branch was silver and the apples that hung upon it were gold. And when he picked it up, he could feel the very essence of the thing as more than a thing, as something that was wholly and completely alive unto itself. And he was enraptured. And again, he felt that song inside of him, the music of being alive. He made his way back to his great hall, where all of his warriors and brethren were just waking after a night's festivities. And they went through their day. And Bran held that branch in his pocket, but still fell back into the routine. And so that evening, they sat down again at their feast. As they were sitting down to their feast, the doors of the great hall opened. And in walked a woman like they'd never seen before. She seemed to shine with an inner light, even as all the light in the room seemed to gather around her. And she spoke with a sort of music that Bran had heard before. It was the same tone that came from the branch in his pocket. And she wove them poetry, 50 quatrains of a beautiful place from which she hailed, Tir na mBan, the island of women. She told Bran of this beautiful island out in the far western seas, and she told him that he was invited to come. She shared with him all the abundance of this place, all of the beauty, all of the endless pleasure that was available to him. And he was intrigued, but he wasn't certain. She must have seen that look in his eye, because the next thing he knew, that silver branch with its golden apples flew from his pocket into her hand, and she was gone. So suddenly he was quite certain that he had to follow. He had to find that silver branch and accept the invitation to Tir na mBan. And so he gathered up 3 times 9 men, each group in their own coracle, and they would set out to sea in search of this woman and the branch she had taken from him, and because they wanted to see this island paradise. And they had been sailing for 2 entire days before out on the horizon they saw some glorious mix of gold and silver and white and blue. It was as if all the elements had mixed together, and as they approached, and as this vision came closer, they realized horses made of the white of sea foam, a chariot made of the gold of the sun, a man who shone with the blue of the sky and the green of all the plant kingdoms, came toward them. Quickly, they realized this was no man. This was a god. This was Mananon. Mananon MacLir, the god of the sea, the son of the ocean. And he came to them, a mix of every element, all the light and all the shadow, all the earth and all the waters. And he spoke. He too spoke to them in great quatrains of poetry. He welcomed them to his place. He asked them, "What do you see when you look around you?" And Bran, of course, he saw nothing but waves. Mananon could tell that this man had his own sense of limited vision. He says, "Ah, you may see nothing but water, but to me, I see a flowering plain." Because you see, gods see the world differently. And Mananon was being told that he had left behind the "what you see is what you get" land of the mortals. Mananon was welcoming them in his own way, even as he was wrapping them in riddles. He pointed the way to go toward Tir Namon, and he continued upon his mighty way. His horses of foam thundering across the ocean, even as they were all made of water. And Bran and his men sailed on until they did see an island. As they approached, they realized it must not have been Tir Namon, because this place was full of men. And they were all laughing hysterically. When Bran called out and asked for the name of this place, when he offered his own name and asked for the men's name in return, they just laughed at him. This was so strange. But as in the nature of an Imrav, when you approach a strange and mysterious island, you do not just sail by. And so one of Bran's men was sent ashore. And the moment this man's foot hit across the stone of the flaggy beach, he too began to laugh. He laughed harder than any of them. He was swept up in a hysteria, a madness of mirth that had no sense. Bran and his men circled round the island three times, each time coming round to their man, asking him, "Come back to us. Come back to the ship." But the man just laughed and laughed. He was lost to them, and their mission had to continue. And so they sailed off further west until eventually they saw before them an island there lying out right beneath the setting sun. An island shaped like the curve of a woman's back when she sleeps upon her side. They had a sense it was the right place, and when they drew just a little bit closer and they saw the beach filled with women, they knew. They knew. And they saw the woman who had appeared in the great hall. But Bran at this point had learned that this was not a "what you see is what you get" world, and so he would not alight from his ship. But the woman, crafty woman that she was, took a great ball of wool and threw it to Bran. And Bran was a man who was raised by mothers and sisters. And when a ball of wool was thrown at you, you caught it without thinking. His hands were instantly ensnarled by the wool. And the woman upon the shore pulled upon the thread and pulled his ship in. And he had no choice but to step out beside her. He did not instantly start to laugh, but he was enraptured. And so the rest of his men followed him, and they were welcomed just as King Bran was. And each was shown to his own room, with his own glorious bed, and you can decide whether he had company there. It depends on the teller whether or not this was an island of chastity or an island of sensuality. But I like to imagine that this was a place of pleasure, shared equally, meted out amongst all the residents of this isle. And so Bran and his men became full-time residents of Tir Namon. It was a place of abundance where the platters were always full, where the orchards were always laden with apples. And they were happy there. They spent a year and a day wrapped in absolute pleasure. But then there was one. There's always one. His name was Nocton. And he went to Bran and he said, I miss my land. I miss Ireland in all of its long, damp winters and all of its summer rain showers. I miss my family. I miss the work we'd have to do to feed ourselves. I miss the struggle and the strife and the war. And Bran tried to shush him, to remind him of all the pleasure that they had available to them, but Nocton would not listen. He was relentless. And eventually, Bran came to the head of the women, the one who had come to him, the one who still held the silver branch in her pocket. And she told him he should not go. He should not go. He should not go. But Bran insisted. He remembered some part of him that was a leader, that responded to the people in his charge. And Nocton seemed to need this more than any golden apple. And so the woman said, you may go. Stop first at the Island of Joy. That is where you left your one compatriot. And then sail back to Ireland, but do not set foot on their shores. Visit, but then return to us. And so that's what they did. Bran and his men set out, first stopping at the Island of Joy, where they were able to call their one compatriot back from all that senseless laughter. And again, a full complement of 3 times 9 men in 3 coracles. They returned to Irish shores. Now Bran had listened and Bran had learned. And so when he approached, he called out in greeting to the people who stood upon the sand. And those people asked, who are you? And he named himself, I am King Bran, son of Feeble, and I am king of this place. And they said, king of this place? We know a man of your name from our stories, from our oldest stories told by our grandfathers, grandfathers, grandfathers. But we are not your subjects. Nocton heard this, but did not hear this. He jumped across the prow of the ship and ran to shore. And the moment his foot touched that sandy beach, he turned to dust in the same way that a corpse left in a crypt for hundreds of years would be dust. And Bran realized what he had been warned of and all that had changed. The people on the shore, they had a scribe who worked with the Oum script. And Bran was able to relay his tale to the people who stood upon the land of Ireland, so they would remember. But Bran and his men, they could not alight from their ships. And so they sailed westward once again, to be heard from nevermore. Shanae, that's the story of the Imraum of Bran. And it's a strange tale in that it takes that sense of the hero's journey and throws it on its head. He went out in search of the medicine, of that silver branch perception. And he got to experience it in all of its fullness. But he did not have that opportunity to bring the elixir back home again, because home had changed. Keeping up with that idea of how time works differently in the other world. We've seen this again and again in stories, whether it's of the piper going into the fairy hill, or whether it's in this case, going out to one of the sacred Western Isles. Hundreds of years pass, while just a year has passed in the lives of our hero. And so he cannot go home again. He cannot bring the elixir back. We're left to wonder whether he returned to Tir na mBan, whether he's out there journeying still. We don't know if he was ever reunited with the Silver Branch or what it's like for him to see with Silver Branch perception. He never made it home again. And so, of course, it's bizarre that here I am telling this third story in the trinity of tales about essentially Ireland and back again, and doing it with a story of a king who was never able to come home. Perhaps this feels kind of like a mythic fail. But instead, for me, it actually feels like exactly what I know myth work to be. And that is the sense that there is a story that has meaning in it at its depths, that speaks to me at my core level, and gives me a way to look at my own life with a new perspective, even if it doesn't necessarily mirror it exactly. Because the fact is, of course, I did make it home again. And so, as I move from storytelling into meaning making, I'm going to place my emphasis elsewhere, not on the ending, but on the transformation that made this story possible for Bran. And that is the moment when he was able to see with Silver Branch perception. So the Silver Branch comes from the original story, but this idea of Silver Branch perception, as I understand it, comes from John Moriarty. He is the late, great Irish mystic philosopher and scholar who died in 2007. And I did not know of his work back when I was studying in Galway, but there he was in Connemara, writing the most brilliant books I can imagine, including Invoking Ireland and Dreamtime and many others. And you can find his lectures online, as well as his big, thick, rollicking books, I would say, that wander across for him what it meant to be a European when that way of being in the world really felt like a corruption in so many ways. Because for him, he saw the world with Silver Branch perception. And for him, that was identified as being with the world as it was. To quote him, what Bran heard when he heard that song, what Bran heard was the branch being itself. And that is radical. And that changes us completely, even though in so many ways we are seeking in the mystical for something more. And what Moriarty wants us to understand is the most mystical perspective of all is seeing the world exactly for what it is. Another line from him is, keep the adventure, the Imrav, afloat. And so it's also with that energy that I go back and use this story to continue to talk about a trip that now is more than a month past for me, but that is going to continue to roll through my life. Because as I said, what I'm focusing on here with Bran's story is not the ending, but the moment of transformation. Because I'm home and I'm changed. Because while I was in Ireland, though John Moriarty wasn't necessarily mentioned that often, Silver Branch perception was. And that's because the Bard Mythology Summer School that I've mentioned many times, where I visited for the first 4 days of my trip, worked with John Moriarty back in the early 2000s, and they often explore the story of Mananon and Bran and Silver Branch perspective. So it must have been deep in my bones when I was able to say, during the trip, but certainly once I got home, when people asked me, how was it? And I said, it was fabulous. It was remarkable. I was able to be exactly myself. And I think what I was saying, without trying to be in that magical, mystical Silver Branch consciousness, was that I experienced that in a way that felt essentially effortless, even though it probably took a whole lifetime of living in the way that I have to be able to arrive back in Ireland more than 25 years after my first visit and to land there and feel as if I'd landed exactly inside of myself. Because I was landing there with friends and companions, I was landing there with the land, and I was landing within my own story, which honors a promise that I made to myself back when I was 20 years old. And yet at the same time, the life that I live now has defied all expectations that I could have had in the year 1999. So yeah, I am feeling that sense of transformation on the other side, and remarkably a sense of coming home to myself, because I think I understand a little bit more of what this Silver Branch perception is, even though it's not fancy, even though it's not showy, perhaps just exactly because of that. Because here I am back at home. And, you know, as I said, one of the things Moriarty always said was keep the adventure, the Imrav, afloat. And I find that I'm doing that in a rather unexpected way. And that is because I will be homeschooling or perhaps unschooling. I'm not sure exactly what your world, what word or what philosophy best suits us yet, because we're very new at it. But my 11-year-old is not going to be going to public school in the fall. And we are going to be educating her at home. And hopefully we found a really nice collective that'll support her with outdoor education, et cetera. But it's a big shift for us that seems both like a radical change and in other ways, like it was a long, long time coming. Because that baby's 11 years old now. But when she was just a few days old, it was probably the first time I ever brought her downstairs in the house because she was born at home and the midwives believe very strongly that a mother should not do a single thing in her first several days, including climb stairs. But I remember so vividly walking down the stairs with her and hearing a voice clear as day. And I had not read Moriarty at the time. I was far, far distanced from anything related to Irish mythology because I was in the thick of mothering and the whole life that I never could have imagined when I was a 20-something student. So I wasn't aware of what I was hearing. But what came through was the voice that said, let her be exactly who she is. And so in many ways, I've been working with that idea for the last 11 years. But now it seems more clear than ever that the way we are meant to work with this idea is to also challenge the system that's been laid out for her, much perhaps in the way that Bran could no longer sit at his feasting table and sit through, suffer through the way things have always been. We recognize that's true now for our daughter. So to let her be exactly who she is, we invite her to see the world in a different way. Is it possible that in this case, saying don't get on the school bus, instead let's discover what stack of books you want to work through this month, is like putting a silver branch into her hand? I hope so. I'm very, very new at this. And at this point, I am dealing both with the deep, deep reality of the moment and also the vision of what might be and what we hope will be. I'll be honest, it's going to be pretty hard to keep up a podcast over the next several months as we readjust to this new way of doing education and being in family. So I'm not sure what will happen. I'll keep you posted. And if there are some pauses and silences, please go back, listen to elements from the back catalog, and send your best wishes to a mother and a daughter who are navigating a whole new way of learning and perceiving and trying to find the way for the silver branch to be real in our world. So there you have it. A story about coming home, inspired by the myth of a king who was never able to come home. A story about the medicine that we're calling here silver branch perception that enables us to see the world not as we wish it would be, not as we've been acculturated to see it, but as it truly is. Because I think that's actually the greatest mystery we have here, is the sense that instead of assuming that the silver branch allows us to see a magical other world all full of gauzy sparkles and all of those conventions of fantasy, silver branch perception, to see with that truly mystical eye, is to see things as they truly are. And that's a wisdom I think I've been in search of for my whole life, even though I thought that I needed to find it in the other world, even though it was instilled in me from all that I've learned from Ireland over the decades and all that I got to experience in my 10 days there. The truth of silver branch perception comes through in the everyday life, wherever we are on the planet, whether it is something we know to be named as a sacred space, whether it is driving down the thruway, whether it is pulling out the garbage. Silver branch perception is to see the moment for everything that it is. And perhaps at our best, perhaps when we are in our most heroic stance, when we are living our heroine's journey most completely, we are able to offer that not just as a lesson, but as a reality to those who would learn from us. Because if Bran couldn't come home again, if he couldn't bring the elixir back, perhaps those of us who are sitting at home and who are called to offer up the medicine every day to those who rely upon us, those who learn from us, maybe that is the entire point of Bran's journey after all. And we have, in fact, arrived back home. So with that, thank you again for listening. I will definitely be putting out another few episodes as we round down season 6. I'll be soon setting off on the new Imrov that is the Writer's Knot journey in our community. As I mentioned at the top, we start the second week of September, and I am working my mama homeschooling schedule around those meetings that we've already set because they really are my solace. I've been running that Wednesday at noon Eastern group for 8 years, and I wouldn't let it go. And I'm really excited to open up this new group on Friday afternoons as well at 3 o'clock Eastern. This particular group is open to all genders, as our Wednesday group is specifically a woman's space. So if you're called, come and be with us there. I would love to journey with you. And I pray that wherever your Imrov takes you, wherever the adventure is in your heart right now, that you allow yourself to dedicate the energy, the devotion required to keep that Imrov afloat. Blessings on the journey. Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.